Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 136 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another They Don't Do That in Europe, TDD TIE, with Scott Diedenbach and Mr. David Palin. And we're talking about the last round of the World Cup, which took place in France. And then we move on to a discussion about the United States World Team selection and everything that happened with that decision-making and the eligibility requirements. We get into a little bit of the weeds, especially after the women's U23 controversy, and sort of put it all together, put a bow on it, and then we will be able to concentrate on Worlds itself and the racing after that. WideAnglePodium.com. That's where I'd love for all of you to go. Go check out all of the shows that we have on there. There's a new slow ride. They're talking kits. The gravel lot has Gordon Wadsworth on it. The bike shop CX guys are talking about front derailleurs. Hey, gravel lot also has Wyoming Cycling Foundation. Lots of new stuff in there. Consummate Athlete with new shows as well. I'd love for you to listen to all of them, to subscribe, to become a member of the network. Also, head on over to YouTube, cyclocrosstelevision.com, youtube.com/CXHairs. Become a member over there. Follow along. I'm going to have tons of content up from Worlds in a few weeks, and I'd love you to be able to get all of it while it happens. That's all I got to say. We're going to start the show, TDD TIE, with Scott Diedenbach and Mr. David Palin, and we are doing that right now.
Tell me when you're ready, Bill.
When I don't talk, I'm ready.
All right. We are back for another edition of TDD TIE. They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, center square, Mr. David Palin.
Good morning. It is a cold one here in Michigan. How's it going out there on the east side?
East side of Michigan or east side of the U.S.?
East side of the U.S.
Bill.
I haven't
been
introduced
is here.
That's why I didn't say, Bill, how's it doing out there? I just wanted to like mysteriously lead into who it might be on the east side.
Bill, what's going on, man? How are you?
I know. I came on here and I was like, it's a cold one today. It's 14 degrees. And you're like, being shorts if it was 14 degrees.
Yeah. So for viewers, I was telling Bill, we just warmed up to -6. Yeah. So I don't even want it. We should have little guy. I wonder what it is in Minneapolis.
Yeah, he's out there working.
Well, it's good. You know, the fact that it's cold means it's good that I have this nice warm beverage to drink.
What are you drinking on a cold day like today?
I am drinking the full Schleck.
Do you know
I
what?
I got a surprise 8-ounce bag of the full Schleck in the mail the other day.
I got the same, but different. I actually am drinking the Hello Cyclocross Friends Espresso. And here's the thing, and I normally would not do this because I just don't think it always is the taste I'm looking for, but using an espresso blend as a pour over, but I did it with this and it's still awesome. Really
it's
happy
still
with it.
Awesome. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I'm going to take it, and I got a bag of that too, and I just got to get my espresso maker out. It's in the closet right now.
But like Bill said, though, you can do it as a pour-over, which is really kind of cool. People kind of think that, if it's an espresso blend, you have to make espresso with it, but the truth is you don't always.
No.
It's just beans, man. It's just a recommended way to make it. Yeah, you can make it however you want.
It's, I'm sure, awesome. As an espresso, I think it would be great in an AeroPress as well. I'm actually not going to use I'm going to save some of that Cyclocross Friends and then just take it to Denmark with me for Worlds, because I always travel with my AeroPress, so I can, have that in there and be ready
to
roll.
You travel with an AeroPress and a water pot, don't you?
Yes.
Oh, no, you don't need it in Europe.
I leave when I go, God, I sound so... yes, when I travel to Europe, I don't take my water pot with me because they always have kettles in hotel rooms, as opposed to the U.S., where we're not that an advanced culture yet, where we just have these stupid little Keurig coffee makers in hotel rooms, but no water kettle.
Why do they even bother with those?
Yeah, I don't know.
But that is the worst thing ever.
And even more than that, crap. And it's something that I never even thought about, but evidently people do awful things to those things and think it's funny for the next person that comes in.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there's a little travel tip for you. Just don't use those.
Oh, man.
You know, especially if...
Thanks
if,
for that image, Bill.
Well, it's, yeah. it's a public health warning. It's not an image. But I will tell you this. You know, here's the giveaway. If your alarm in your hotel room from the stupid alarm clock that they shouldn't have anymore goes off at 3 a.m., you know that person also did something to your coffee maker.
There you go. That's a good tip right there.
Jokesters.
But just avoid the coffee anyways, because it's at
but
best,
you can get
it sucks.
You can get a collapsible... plug-in water kettle for like $20.
Yeah. There you go. And bring your AeroPress.
AeroPress.
Boom.
Yeah.
And the reason we're even talking about this is so that people get over to GrimPoorBrothers.com and or go to the Wide Angle Podium website and click on the GrimPoor Brothers link and buy some of the full schleck or hello cyclocross friends. Help the network, help the shows. We appreciate it.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah. Who knows if I'm going to even do an intro, so I should just say it now. Hello, cyclocross friends. And welcome to episode... No idea.
That's okay. You can splice that in. You can fix that in post. But we are here today because we just had a World Cup, the World Cup that was in France. We've been talking about, the French World Cup, you know, this year all season long. And now it is passed. And so we got a lot of that to talk about. We're going to talk about U.S. Elite World Team Selection. Correct,
yes,
Bill?
That is correct.
All right. Yeah. So a lot of good stuff. So let's get rolling with the World Cup. Did you guys watch it?
Yes.
I did.
where would we like to start?
With the name. Is it Pont Chateau, is that correct? Something like
Pont
that?
Pont Chateau. That's how I would say it.
Is it
Which
one
makes
word?
It right.
One word or two?
It's hyphenated. I don't know.
Oh, it's okay. The hyphenate. You see, that's the thing. It's like that was the debate I was interested in. The folks that were putting it all, smushing it together all as one word, and then the hyphenated ones.
Right. Yeah.
Ethan Glading, who is with him and Andrew Giuliano, traveled to the race together yesterday, and he sent us a photo of it, of the road sign, and it was hyphenated.
So why would people not, why do they never not hyphenate
it? Well, I think it's something that
we
just don't understand, because the same thing happened to me in Val Nord, where it's the exact same thing on top of the mountain. It's all one word, and then down at the kind of the town below, it's hyphenated or two words.
I see. Okay.
That I thought was the most interesting thing about that race. Okay, moving on to the world selection.
All right, so we've got the juniors race. We'll just give the results, because in first place, say it,
Thibaut
Nice.
Yeah.
Second place, Witzi Musin. Third place, Carlos Canal Blanco from Spain. That's cool. Fourth place, Tommaso Bergagna. So that's an Italian name that I'm just mangling. And in fifth place, Luke Verburg. The not a great day. I was just telling you guys, not a great day for the American juniors.
No, not at all.
The top placing American junior was Andrew Strohmeyer in 26th place. And then Nick Carter was 41st. The rest of the Americans are all on the second page of results, which is never a good thing. Nick Strohmeyer in 41st, Alex Morton in 43rd, and unfortunately, Magnus Sheffield DNF'd. And there's even more bad news, because we just heard Magnus actually crashed and injured his collarbone and is presumably not going to be at Worlds. So that sucks.
Yeah, that stinks. So that's, he had a really good season. It was a
and
promising result.
And potentially, that's even going to affect his road. And I think the junior time trials are like all at the end of February or something, right? So,
Well, hopefully with a collarbone, he'll be able to get on the trainer and, you know, time trial.
And still stay in some kind of shape. Yeah. Alex Morton has been over there crushing it, been just staying over there, 17-year-old living in Europe. Went down once, dropped his chain, basically was in last place, rode back up into the field, and then punctured right at the end, and then, you know, just went backwards as he had punctured. Nick also had an incident. I don't know exactly what happened to Nick. So he had an incident too, bringing him down to 41st. And yeah, the only American without an issue was Strohmeyer. So
yeah, and this was certainly not the race to have any incidents at. For people who didn't see it or haven't watched it yet, this is a it was a predominantly grass track, really wide, but still
no mud.
There was a set of planks that, you know, when we get to the elites, where they were riding, but not without issue. And also a set of stairs, same way, you know, rideable for some. And again, not without issue. And then you know, a dismount. So two dismounts, but like probably the fastest race we've seen this year. And it's the type of thing that people want to throw out, like grass crit. No, this was a pretty awesome track, and it just meant a different kind of racing. It was more group racing. It was super wide turns, but that really amplified the riders who were able to conserve energy, who were good at cornering, and then it had some really steep climbs that I don't think we appreciated.
On
TV, you know, talking to Drew Giuliano, who's over there, he was saying, like, especially that whole area near the planks, like you didn't appreciate how freaking steep that was to those uphill planks, and then after that, and then that climb to the finish. So that was, you know, that was the kind of track we're dealing with, not this typical European muddy thing. And what that meant was, I mean, look at Alex Morton, who had those two issues, gets back into it. He was next to last on the lead lap, only 5 minutes down. That's how tight this racing was, and how, like, any mistake exactly. And you were just going back. I mean, Strohmeyer had a great race. You know, his first went over there. It's his first World Cup, European World Cup ever. And he's 26th place at a minute 26 back. We're usually looking at 26th place, two laps down, you know, 7-8 minutes back, whatever, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, this was just.
Where are you seeing that minute 26?
Oh, my friends over at cyclocross24.com.
Because on the UCI page, they've got him only 45. Well, no. Okay. I see. No, it was four. Okay. That's his total time. I'm sorry. You're right, Bill. Keep it rolling.
But yeah. So it just.
Well, let me edit that in post. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, edit that in post.
But I think what we saw was a lot of group racing, a lot of tight races. You know, we'll get to the men's elite. There definitely was a big factor that made that more possible. But, you know, I think it was these were spectator friendly races without having you know, epic conditions.
What were the elite men lap times? Because they did 11 laps.
Yeah, not insane.
So, I mean, their lap times were very, very fast, which meant, too, I think, you know, when we get the if not getting pulled makes that a lot harder. If that's where your race is, right, at World Cups, it's to try and stay on the lead lap. They just made that a lot harder with that fast lap like that. So, all right. Do we want to move on to U23? Anything else about the juniors? David, you got anything?
I got nothing really.
We covered it all.
What we talked about, you guys got it covered.
All right, we'll move over to U23 because in the U23 top five, in first place was Thomas Pidcock. Second place, Anthony Benoist.
Antoine
Benoit. In third, Benoit. Yeah.
French.
In third place, Jakob Dorigani. In fourth place, Thomas Kopecky. And in fifth place, Eli Easerbeet. Gage Hecht was over there, 21st place, and Spencer Petroff, 22nd place, and Brandon Fix was over there in 38th place. And that's it for the Americans. So there we go. Any comments? Questions?
Just, you know, we talk about all this close racing, TP Racing's Thomas Pidcock actually.
Yeah,
out front, won it by almost 10 seconds, just really picking up. I think it took him a little while to get back into cyclocross, but now he is really showing the talent that he is. I mean, this is, and it's, you know, we talk about all these interlopers and stuff, and it's gonna be interesting to see how much
he
sticks around.
What he's gonna race at Worlds? Is he gonna race U23?
I would imagine he's racing U23.
I would too, since he doesn't. It's not like he didn't win the jersey last year, so that's still a, you know,
yeah.
That's still a really good thing to achieve right there as the U23 World's jersey.
It's kind of interesting, too, because the Belgians just announced their team, Ellie Ezerbeet, is racing in the U23 race as well. But he's, you know, for a guy who is currently in that jersey, not really having the year that he had last year, and we see it here. And maybe this isn't, you know, and maybe this isn't his forte, these fast, you know, races, not a technical race, but coming in fifth, he's definitely has his work cut out for him. And I think, you know, once we come back and do our Worlds preview, I got to think that Pidcock's going to be at the top of the list for favorites.
Yeah, but he kind of was last year too, though. Remember?
Yeah.
And then just had, I mean, he had a terrible one day race. You know, he just had a bad day, I think is the way I thought it went, and may have been the strongest rider overall, but that day just wasn't his day, and so we'll see what happened. But I agree. I mean, it's those are the two we're going to be looking at again this year. Pidcock and Ezerbeet. So,
and I think you're going to be saying the name Capecchi as well.
Is that going to be? David's giving us a sneak peek at his picks, Bill.
All right, I like it.
No, my pick. I'm just saying that you guys are going to be saying the name.
Well, you know, I'm sure I haven't really looked at the Belgian press yet this morning, or if they're talking about this, but they have to be a little concerned here, because, you know, we talk in the past couple of weeks about how they're bolstering their women's program and really want to see more Belgian women, near the front of the race, especially since the Dutch seem to be. Dominating those fields right now. You have first place GB. Second place is it French?
France.
Yeah, France.
French.
Third place Italian.
Italy.
Fourth place Czech Republic. First Belgian. We can actually say this now. We can talk about the first Belgian. Fifth place, Ezerbeet.
Fifth place.
Second Belgian. Lander Lux in ninth place, and that's after three other French guys.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy. I mean, I know it's a home race, and they definitely got that motivation. Probably had time to look at that track more than anybody else, but that's pretty amazing. And then you look at the Dutch men, but I mean, a different story. But they don't even start showing up until 10th, and then they were just having a group ride from 10th until 13th.
Right. We see that a lot, though, you know.
I'm going to throw a couple of races out to you from last year for Eli Ezerbeet. Leuven on January 7th, he was in fifth place. He didn't finish the national championships. He didn't finish Oettingen. He was in 14th place in Zonnebeke. And then he won the ninth World Cup and came back and won the World Championships.
I'll bet,
so
too, if...
Coming back from fifth place is not, I wouldn't write him off.
Yeah. And David, as soon as you said that, I think I will bet that if I was probably, like, right now, a broken record, and last year was saying, well, Ezerbeet not having really the year we're expecting them to have.
Yeah.
He won't be there at Worlds. One of us picked him to win Worlds.
Would that be you?
Last year, yeah. I did. I don't you remember? I had every pick right, Bill.
Yeah.
See, my memory's not good enough to either remember who I chose.
Every winner that we picked.
All right.
That was the one.
If you're
the
tuning,
rest were, if, I mean, if I picked Wout. But that was the one nobody was picking Ezerbeet, and I don't know why I picked
him. So basically, if you're tuning in this week, you better tune in next week to make sure that you get Scott Edenbach's picks for Worlds, so you know who to put down the big money on.
This year I'll get none. Zero. All right, let's move on to the women. Do you guys want to do that?
Let's do that.
Since we've beat this horse to death. All right, for the women, elite women, top five. In first place, Mariana Voss. Second place, Denise Betsema. Third place, Maud Captains. Fourth place, Celine Del Carmen Alvarado. If you haven't noticed, that's four Dutch riders in a row. Fifth place, Ellen Van Looy.
First
she
Belgian.
Breaks the first Belgian. And at for a time, in fifth place was Anne-Marie Verst for a long part of that race.
Yeah.
There was a long part of that race where the top five women were all Dutch.
Ellen Van Looy, so, just like a savvy road racer. She just dangled in that race.
Yes.
And then finally made it back up to that well, not the front group, but that but the front of that second group.
Yeah. And so, you know,
let's
talk
Katie
about
Compton, first American, didn't have such a bad race either in the beginning.
Well, yeah, that's one of the points. So let me just do the, for the Americans. Yeah. In 10th place was Katie Compton. 11th place was Katie Keough. In 23rd place was Clara Hansinger. In 24th place was Courtney McFadden. In 26th place was Rebecca Ferringer. And in 35th place was Katie Klaus. And I believe, where was she? In 46th place was Rebecca Gross. Oh, and we forgot, I forgot, in 42nd was Corey Sissek. So there we go.
Yeah,
that's
Corey
the American.
Corey Sissek, who's basically living the dream, racing over there week after week.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you
and
know,
Magny Rochette there, by the way, 29th place, North American.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. We're giving the Canadian
some love
writers now every now and then. So, but yo, Katie Compton, her start really good. I mean, she, I said to my wife when we were watching it, Voss gets out there, does that really fast first lap that she does often do. And a lot of times you see Katie kind of drop off the back of that and then spend the rest of the race pulling and pulls everyone right back in, you know. But when you see Katie Compton at the front, even during that first fast lap, Katie was staying right with him, got a great start. I think she was third across the line and third into the first turn and stays with him on that first fast lap. I was like, oh, man, she is going to be trouble. You know, if she can stay with him on that fast lap and then has some power to pull away. I think I didn't see on any social media if Mark posted anything or anything. Did she start having allergy problems?
She punctured.
Oh, did she? Okay, yeah. Okay. Because she was still looking down at her bike, even coming across the finish line. I think without that bad luck, she might have still been there. But again, you know, a really good start for her. So that was good to see.
And that's what, you know, that's what I was talking about with the juniors. It was so, like, if you got off that train, like, getting back on it was not easy. So for her to, you know, have a puncture, have to change bikes, I'm not, you know, we're not clear on where that happened in relation to the pits. But then to fight back on and get back up to 10th was pretty impressive.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, when the overall speed is so high, it is tough to get back on.
You know, and I've
now
I think,
in this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill. I was just going to say, in this race, we had those series of crashes all at the same point. And it didn't look like that big of a deal, right? When you looked at the course, I mean, when the first time it happened, you're like, oh, that was unlucky. And then it happens again right away. You're like, wait, that was the exact same spot. And then it happens again. And then again, I think there was four crashes there in the women's race. It's like, what the heck is going on? So what did you guys think about that? Was it the wooden stakes on the wrong side of the
David, I want your opinion on this, but basically to set it up for people, it was this downhill fast left-hander. So they were a high rate of speed and then coming into this quick left-handed turn that people were just sliding out or just making the axis of that turn was wide enough that they were catching either wheels or handlebars on these, you know, big wooden stakes that they had. So I guess the argument that was going around was that the scrim fencing was on the wrong side. Otherwise, the posts were exposed to the riders as opposed to exposed to the spectators.
Right.
Okay.
There were, there was sections all over that course where, like, it would be one way for a certain length, and then it would switch and go back. I don't know what the thinking was there, why it was one way.
I don't know if that helps.
I buy into it though.
Yeah, does that really help?
I'm not saying I agree with that. that's the reason. I'd never really noticed that if that's like that at every race. I don't know, but. I just think they needed, with the speed that they were coming down that turn, I just think they needed a little bit more room to make that turn coming down that downhill. You know, that, like you said, Bill, that arc of that turn was just a little bit bigger than they need a little bit more space. And it was too quick of a left-hand turn. And it seemed to always happen like maybe fourth rider back in a group, right?
Right.
It was never was the first person. It was like something was hidden that they couldn't see.
Yeah, it was like being put into a gutter on the road, you know, and you were that far back on the echelon, and then there was no more room to go.
But when they were hitting that, I mean, we're talking upended. I mean, we're talking wheels sticking straight up. The bike's flipping.
We had one woman, unfortunately, who was taken off the track on a stretcher. We had Yara Castellan, who actually was having a great race and was right up there, young Dutch rider, and you know, and that was just she got up and wanted to keep that was sort of an odd incident, you know, with the medic who was there, who was trying to keep her on the ground, and she was basically throwing her off and wanted to get her bike and get back in the race, but definitely did not look good and ended up not finishing the race. But yeah, and I think in the end it's one of these things that's, it's difficult to know, and you just have to think, well, were the races before that not going as fast? Did something happen as far as like the conditions, you know, was it cold?
Surface
was
quality,
it, was there, you know, dew on the ground? Something happened as far as people sliding out. It's tough. It's tough as an organizer sometimes to figure out where those spots are going to be. But after it happened, I mean, it's definitely a place that needed padding. It needed, you know, something there.
Bouncy barrier.
They needed some remediation at that point.
Yeah.
But you kind of asked me what my opinion was on it, and I don't want to come across as crass by any means, but they all pre-rode the course. So it was not a big surprise. It should not have been a big surprise to them what they experienced there. That said, it came across dangerous, and therefore they needed to adjust. And not everybody did adjust. And if that does mean in that situation where you're being pushed because of the speed of the course, because of, for whatever reason, you're a little bit deeper in that line coming to a dangerous section, you got to adjust. Now, again, I'm trying not to just let race organizers come off easy on that. But still, you got to race what's there.
Yes, but I think that a lot of times, I would say the majority of the times, let's go with 100% of the time, you are not doing your recon laps behind Mariana Voss going full gas.
You are not.
I am not, correct.
Yeah, I mean, I do occasionally, but... that is true. No question about it. And again...
And it seems like an innocuous turn without that.
That's what it was, man. It didn't look like anything weird or anything.
It's also, if the women's elite race was the only one that had started happening, and you can't really, they can't really stop the race. So, and I'm assuming that they make adjustments for the men's race. I didn't even pay attention to that corner once it was.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that it looked like they had it. I mean, obviously they had some brighter tape and stuff up there, but I mean, they probably had to redo it after all the crashes right there. So I don't know if it just became more visible, if the men just heard about it, saw what was going on, and so were a little bit more careful. Hard to say. I don't know. The other thing I want to mention too, if you look at, a great win by Mariana Voss, you know. I mean,
about that part yet?
No.
Well, we mentioned the results, but when her and Betsema were together, you know, in the final laps here, just the two of them, did you have any doubt in your mind that Mariana Voss is going to win? Anybody?
No.
No, and it's basically page one of the Mariana Vossa playbook, right? You know, I mean, she was gonna test her a little bit, see if she could get away like the last lap or so. You know, this started as the great thing. You know, this played out as really everything you want to see in a race, in that we had really dynamic group racing. You know, you were talking about Katie Compton, who was out there early, who was sort of pushing it. Then we had these two groups that split, and then the groups came back together. You know, so it was this really dynamic race, and you really didn't know. And Betsema looked awesome in this race. Maude Kapteyn's looked good. I mean, Betsema and Kapteyn's yelling at each other during one lap, you know, coming down there about who's going to go in front.
Yeah, what was up with that?
I think it was just she wanted her to do some work, since it was such a road race. So that was awesome to see. You know, you got Alvarado out there, who's just having an amazing year. You got Ellen Van Looy, who, as we said, is like in that second group and fighting back and like bringing everybody back up. So it was just awesome. And then at the end, you know, you had the two stronger racers who are able to get away and separate themselves from the rest of that group. And I had mentioned earlier that the uphill planks, and then there was a pretty steep incline after that, and they went actually the incline was before the planks, and it was like last lap, just sitting on, got to the bottom of that hill, and Mariana Voss put in this effort that just was insane. Just
she got like 20 seconds in like five pedal strokes, it seems.
And what you see is you know, you look at that, and then when you see the replay, what you really need to focus in on is Betsema's body language, because it's a little bit of, oh, you got to be kidding me. And then dejection. I mean, the shoulder slump, the head goes down. It's like, nothing I can do to that.
Yep. Not much I can do there.
And the only thing that was surprising to me was I think Mariana Voss was kind of surprised, because she kept looking back.
Yeah.
As if there was
a
chance.
A little bit, yeah, for sure. Another thing I wanted to look at really quick, if you look down from, I mean, of course, we got Mariana Voss, 32. But if you look down from Betsema, Kapteyn's, Alvarado, all Dutch, 26 years old, 25 years old, 21 years old.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then
that is some strong potential.
And then
for
even top 10,
of
you throw in Verst and Nagengast, and you got, you know, 24 and 21. And then, I'm sorry, exactly. And then Inga Vanderheiden at 20 in ninth place.
Yeah. So that is some strong women racers that are very young still for the Dutch. And that's going to be something to see for the future for sure. So. All right. Anything else we want to talk about the women's race?
Yeah. One last thing, just because, you know, we were able to see it all year long, just the struggles, both on and off the bike, that Carole Mani was having all year for her to come back, win French Nationals. So, you know, French champion, and then come in here and then pull off a top 20. I got to, you know, in front of, you know, like, Laura Verdonchot and Lois Sell, she's got to be pleased with that result. That's a great result.
Yeah, that was a cool thing to see. You could tell as soon as she came around that final corner, I said, I'm like, that's Caroline Mani. I'm like, and I'm not saying that because I know it's the French jersey. I can just tell by the way she's riding. She's got that unique style, and you could immediately identify her on the bike. So it was very cool. You're right, Bill, to see her come around that corner, top 20, and, you know, in that French national champions jersey. So, yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, and then the last thing I just say is, you know, seeing some of our up-and-coming women in this race with good results. Clara Hansinger looking really strong in 23rd place, and then Katie Klaus getting her first World Cup action of the year overseas in Europe, and coming in with a strong 35th, you know, 5 minutes off the pace, but sort of thrown into a fast
old
one right off the bat.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Bill, what's going on with Ms. Noble? A lot of people have been asking.
She's training. She'll be she'll be at Hoegerheide.
Yeah.
Hoegerheide, then Worlds.
Cool. All right, moving on to the men. Sound good?
Yep.
Sounds good.
This race was not going to decide with Vanderpool out, not traveling to it, and this race was not going to, and both Wout and Tone in it, not going to probably decide the outcome of the World Cup series, but was going to definitely be instrumental in that outcome. So in first place was Wout Van Aert. Second place, Tone Aerts. Third place, Michael Van Ternout. Fourth place, Lars Vandehaar.
Lars.
And in fifth place, Jens Adams. Jens Adams was riding in that front group for a huge portion of that race.
He was up front there.
So, yeah, that was awesome to see. But Wout Van Aert getting the win, first World Cup win of the season. He takes the overall, but again, it really comes down to who is going to win at Hoegerheide. Whoever wins, if one of those two win, they win the overall for the World Cup. So,
Bill was pointing out earlier, that's going to be significant for world selection.
Yeah, but we didn't do that on air.
Tell us about that, Bill.
I know. That's why. It was the lead-in.
Okay. Yeah, that was in that. We had that discussion in our friends over at the Slow Ride podcast refer to as the podcast green room. So it's an interest. The Belgians announced their world team and their men's, you know, we can discuss other things about the selection, but as far as their men's elite go, they have picked seven riders because they have the world champion. So Wout Van Aert you get six riders on your team. Mm-hmm. The world champion is not part of that selection. So for them, they get seven riders, including Wout. And then you also get an eighth rider if you have the World Cup winner on your team. So the potential is, you know, six riders plus, you know, there are all these other things, including the, they could have had nine. Vanderpool is the European champion, so the Dutch get an extra spot there, but the potential is for eight. The what they have right now is a situation where Wout Van Aert is the world champion, and now because of this race he is also the World Cup leader, so he is taking two spots. If it turns out that Tone Aerts is able to best Wout at Hoegerheide, then he will win the World Cup. He'll be taken off of the six selection and be set aside, and that means that Tim Merlier will be able to be on the team. So they'll have eight. Right now he is, as the Google translation says, in the waiting room.
So potential seven for sure.
Seven for sure.
Potentially eight for the Belgians, depending if Tone wins at Hoegerheide.
He
doesn't even have to win. He just has to beat Wout.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that, you know, happened there, you were talking about nothing decided, but what was decided, which you mentioned with by Vanderpool not attending this race, he basically took himself out of the running. So there's
for the World Cup.
For the World Cup leader. Yeah. Winner. He can't do that. And then the other, you know, sort of side point I'd like to make here is that we are talking about Wout as if he is washed up and done in cyclocross.
This is a point I wanted to make. Yes. Go for it.
Yeah. And just looking towards the road and not really, you know, into it anymore. And he's leading the World Cup. You know, that's just the insanity of how talented this guy is. I think that he may be, you know, you look at how he's training for road. You look at even his body composition. He says that he's, 10 kilos heavier than he was last year. It was like 20 pounds, you know, sort of preparing for those classics, you know, but still winning the World Cup. It's just insane.
I mean, you think about it, Wout wins his next two races and all of a sudden, he's had a great season. He's World Cup champion and world champion, and all of a sudden, his season is like the greatest, one of the best seasons.
Best season to go out on.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Retired champion.
So yeah, it could turn around in these two races for Wout Van Aert. Now that's a tall order. Don't get me wrong, but I'm certainly within the realm of possibility.
So here's something that I want y'all's opinion on, because I am always a big defender of Wout when it comes to his technical skill, and I think that this is something that sometimes people sort of harp on, that's one of the reasons he can't keep up with Vanderpool is because Vanderpool's technical skill is and handling is so much better, which I think it is definitely better. And we know, was it 5-6 years ago when Wout had that horrific crash on the planks and I think broke some ribs, right, and really just kind of messed himself up. And from that point on, really made the decision, unless absolutely necessary, he was going to dismount when it came to the planks. And you see right. that in races. You know, if there's no advantage to be made and the rest of the field is staying on their bike, he's the one guy. You're world champion. Now you're a World Cup leader, is getting off his bike. Traditionally, you know, traditional technique, running the planks, getting back on.
Yep.
This yep. was a yep. race that...
I always tell Lars he should do the same, by the way.
This is a race that was not... Really, when it came down to crunch time, it seemed like the winning move was going to be to stay on your bike and right. ride the planks. How much were you just like, eesh, every time Wout rode those? The skill, it's
well,
just
then
amazing.
He had that
the
one
skill
where
just
he,
is not
where,
there.
Where he almost caught his rear wheel.
That's
remember?
What I'm saying. There are a couple times where he's going sideways, and I think it's just because he doesn't do it. He probably doesn't practice it, but it's just really, really interesting to see him forced into that position and seeing where, oh, this is actually something where his skills may not be up to the level of everyone else because he's made this decision that he's not gonna ride the planks.
At the same time, very early, I don't know if it was the first or second lap, when they go into that, remember when they were three wide and he was not going to back down? It was him, Tone, and I forget who the other person was. Might have been Sweek or someone. And they were three wide, all three hopping both barriers. Yeah. And Wout was right there with them, and he was not going to back down, and he did not dismount and, you know, cleared him cleanly and stayed right with him and was really putting the pressure on. They were all just kind of attacking right there at the same time. So, you know, like you said, Bill, it's not like he's, oh, I'm only going to hop him the last two laps or something like that. He's kind of letting the race dictate what he's going to do as he comes into the barriers, or at least it looks that way. And he wasn't going to back down there, and he hopped him cleanly that time. And then like had that problem. Speaking of the problem is, you know, there was that one point where Lars Vandehaar on the steps basically took out the entire Telenet Fedea team except for Tone Aerts.
I was going to let David sort of explain what was happening with those steps, because that was another run versus ride decision that seemed to go awry.
Yeah. Lars wipes out the entire Telenet Fedea team almost.
I mean, you could say that he was cheating there, but he wiped out his own team.
Well, wasn't Tone in front of him?
Tone was the only one in front of him.
So that's like the old
the blocking technique.
It's not the Copenberg. it's one of the Paris-Roubaix Tour of Flanders climbs that the thing was let your leader go through and then the Domestique crashes at the bottom. So everybody has to run the hill.
Nice. Yeah.
And then of course Lars is strong. He fights back and regains that lead group. I don't think Van Kessel, someone else might have come too, but that was kind of a funny point there. So
how about you know, for the sort of how this race played out, kind of a little similar to what we had with the women's race and really dynamic group racing. It was actually Lars who was able to bring back that second group and integrate it into a bigger group. I would say it's sort of mixed feelings, because I liked the flow of this race. I liked how it sort of ebbed and flowed and they'd sort of be crushing each other and then they'd kind of be looking around. But there were a couple times when they were coming up that, you know, I think it was even when Tone attacked once and I was, you know, my comment was, hey, everybody, here are my cards. Take a look. And it was like three laps to go, you know, and he attacked up that last hill and got a little lead and then sat up and everybody caught up. But once he sat up, it's one of those, the other thought that was going through my head was like, this is why we need 50-minute races for everyone, because Wout basically got to the front and almost was backpedaling down the finishing stretch.
Then
you know, at the end what we saw was, you know, talk about if it's the road training or whatever else, but Wout just able to open it up, win it in a sprint, take out Tone, and just look super strong in that race. You know, I think we did see, even despite that crash, we saw the return of Lars Vanderhaar. I think this is, you know, having a really good race in there. Michael Van Turnhout still up there. Lawrence Swick was up there, you know,
till he crashed.
Yeah, and that was good to see. We haven't seen that in a while. And you can't get rid of the Vanderpools, because I think race of the day was David Vanderpool, who was basically just dominating that second group and winning the sprint at the end for seventh place, a minute 15 down.
Yep. Yeah. And he had a front line start, right? Did he get the whole shot or no?
He did. I don't know. He was picking up. Yeah, Vanderpool, yeah. You know, keeping those whole shots alive.
That's right. So, all right. Well, let's cover the Americans really quickly. In 29th place was Curtis White. He was the top American finisher. Kind of hard to spot him because he was in the Pan Am jersey. So it's just like I kept forgetting that was him. In 41st place, Max Juddelson. In 45th place, Andrew Giuliano. And in 50th place, Josh Bauer. And in 51st place,
my man,
Tyler Cloutier. So there you go. And I got to give a special shout out in 43rd place to Chris Aitken.
Yeah, I saw Chris was there.
Yes.
Couple notes there. One, Juris Nieuwenhuis looks like he DNF'd. He would have definitely, I think, been up there. It's been coming on really strong. Same with the Spanish rider, Philippe Orts, also DNF'd. A couple things here. Curtis White commenting that he felt really good. But he's just been doing heavy training block before this, so the legs just weren't responding at the end. But he was still happy with that race, how it went. So that's good, especially in a super fast race. Max Juddelson on his Rock Lobster went in for his pit bike for the final lap, finished on the lead lap on a single speed.
Nice. That is awesome.
One thing that I did want to note here just overall about this race was interesting, and it sort of reminded me of the North American World Cups that we see, and one of the reasons that I really think that all of us are in favor of making this a more global sport is that if you looked at the women's field, there's 55 racers on the start list. 19 of them were either from France or Spain. And you're not getting that in the other World Cups. You know, that was kind of bringing the race to them, and they all responded. And that's cool. I love seeing that. I mean, that's the same thing that we saw in the U.S. with the North Americans, with the Canadians and the U.S. riders. Give them the opportunity, and then we saw it, especially in the junior fields, that the French riders were all up there. So this I thought was a really good scene and a good reason to have more of these races outside of just Belgium and the Netherlands.
I agree. I thought it was a great race overall. I thought the men's race is one of the best men's races we've seen all year.
Oh, for
now,
sure.
Granted,
yes,
that was because of no Vanderpool, but still, it was still one of the best men's races we've seen. And it was, and even if say Matthew Vanderpool's there and he's 17 minutes off the front of the group, right? It's still, everyone else would have still been bunched together and racing each other. That's what's been missing for me in a lot of the men's races. You have a rider, 20 seconds.
Scott.
A rider, 30 seconds. So this one did not happen there, and that's what made it so good. Yes, Bill?
Are you saying that Matthew Vanderpool is bad for cyclocross?
So here's the question I was going to ask.
No, it's not because of him. I'm saying you see, even if he's off the front, I don't care. As long as there's other racing going on within the field, you know, but we didn't see that this race. So, no, I think Matthew Vanderpool is great for cyclocross. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to ask, do you think, given how excited we are about this race, do you think Vanderpool is bad for cyclocross? And the answer to that, of course, is no, but it does bring out this interesting thing, because even if there is groupings or a race for second or a race for third, let the first two go off, I can't get out of my mind that, yeah, I'm watching it. It's kind of exciting to see who comes in third, but that's third. And this race is really wrapped up.
I agree.
It's not the same as racing for the win, absolutely, but there's still an element of interest. There can still be an element of interest to it when there is still group racing, even if it's not for the win.
Yes.
I agree. It's not as exciting, for sure. No question about it.
It's how we try to make it more interesting to ourselves, even when we know the outcome.
It's the same. It's the same argument of the opposite of it. Oh, I just like watching a master race this course and just seeing how he takes all these turns. And I'm like, yeah, that's good for a lap or two, but I'd rather see him racing somebody.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Anything else we want to talk about? Pontchâteau.
No.
Is it on the calendar next year?
I don't know.
Yes. If it were up to you.
Oh, I think so. I think so.
Yeah.
Most definitely, if it's up to me.
Yeah, I think so too. So, all right. Well, that was the big race results that we wanted to talk about this week, Bill. We were going to move on to talk about.
Let's get into it.
Oh, no. The U.S. Cycling names 2019 Cyclocross World Championship Team Elite. Now, the juniors and U23s have already been named, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And now we've just been waiting for the elite. So, Bill, do you want to take us through it?
Yeah, and all what right. I would also say is that if you have not seen Amanda Naumann's article that she wrote for CXHairs.com, where she does a sort of scientific analysis, she likes when I say science, of the selection criteria and who, based on that criteria, is eligible for selection, and kind of breaks it down, looks at all of the requirements that USA Cycling set forth and said, here are the people who are eligible, here are the people who are auto, here are the people who can be considered. And it's a really interesting breakdown, and I think even more interesting now that we know who has been selected for the men and for the women to go to Denmark for Worlds.
Yeah, if you want a very like good understanding of what the process is for choosing that, she covers every single angle in that. So you'll have a real, real full understanding of what the criteria are for sure if you read that article. It was really good.
The other part of this, if this nerdy side of cyclocross isn't something that you follow, you know, I have an article on there as well that breaks down the decision and the eligibility requirements for the U23 and junior picks, which was a little controversial. And the main reason that it was controversial is because USA Cycling made the decision not to send a full complement of U23 women, which also will include the junior women, because they had these eligibility requirements, and nobody, you know, only a certain number met those requirements. I think it was 5 out of the 7, so 2 were left open, and they then were able to make an exception if the rider was medal capable. They decided that only one rider was. She was in that 5, and then the other 2, there wasn't anybody else that met that requirement outside of the eligibility requirement, so they did not take a complete field. And that, you know, and I think that we've had this discussion, you know, a lot of people were upset about that, and I think that there is an argument to be made that the requirement should be more set for developing riders rather than looking at them as elite riders, that you have to either, it's black or white, you either make this eligibility requirement or you don't. When it comes to the elites, I think that is perfectly acceptable and that we should do that and we should follow that. And
I agree with you. Yeah. Totally agree.
And if you set out these parameters and you say, hey, if you are an elite cyclocross racer, a professional cyclocross racer, you need to meet these certain criteria before we're going to put you on the world's team. Perfectly acceptable. All right.
Yeah.
You guys ready?
And just one last thing on that. Yep. If it didn't come clear through what you guys already said, Amanda is an engineer and a good rider. So when you can pair those two things together, her Amanda explains all. is really, really good. So go out to Crosshairs and go find it, read it. You will enjoy it.
Hit it, Bill.
All right. So the elite women, and there were 6 spots available. Our North American counterpart, Magali Rochette, holds the Continental Championship. So that spot was not available for the women. So it was a team of 6. All six spots were filled. Katie Keough, Katie Compton, Ellen Noble, Samantha Runnels, Ellie Anderson, and Rebecca Farringer. Those are your elite women, and all of them within the top 50. That was the eligibility requirement, and right. Yeah, filled the whole squad. Any thoughts? I guess I should say that. Do we know if Courtney McFadden turned down a spot or just...
I don't know. That's a good question.
Actually, I'll bet she didn't. And I think what happened here is for the women, you know, wanted to be considered, you had to be in the top 50. So that meant that Ellie Anderson was 32nd. Farringer was 35th in the world. Clara Hansinger, 36, she's already making it as U23. So the people that were sort of on the fence and left out, unfortunately, our good friend Sonny Gilbert was in 43rd, could have been selected, but no slots available. Same goes for Crystal Anthony in 46, and then Courtney McFadden in 47th.
Yeah. Had there been that 7th spot, that would have been a tough call among those riders right there.
Yeah.
Tougher call, yeah. I think for that elite women list that we got, I think, you know, I got first thing that jumps out to me is congratulations to Sammy Runnels,
yes.
First time ever on
for
the
sure.
U.S. Worlds
sure.
team. Yep. So well done there. You know, you gotta give it up for the effort that she's put in this season. So there you go, and there's the payoff. So, who else? Anything? Rebecca Farringer. I mean. She was kind of her and Sammy were kind of the two I was wondering about the most. But Rebecca actually had a really good race this past weekend too.
Yep. Yeah.
At that World Cup. So I think that really helps her solidify that and, you know, put a stamp on that being in that selection. So
yeah. Well and done. The others, you know, they make it on the requirements. You also, you know, somebody made the point, it's kind of interesting, like Ellen Noble was not an automatic selection for making a podium of a World Cup. She made it because she was the leader as far as points went for the Pro CX, for the C1s. That was basically how she automatically got in there. You have Katie Keough making it because she won a World Cup in Jingle Cross. And then
right.
Katie Compton, I think... You know, I mean, she's going to make it anyway, but U.S. national champion, I think, gets you in. So yeah. that was the way.
And does podium at previous Worlds get you in? I don't remember.
I don't
think
so.
We got to go
so.
Back and read Amanda's, I don't think so. Amanda's article. So,
oh,
all
it
right,
does.
Well, yeah.
No, it does. I'm sorry. That's the first time. Okay. I'm reading Amanda's thing. Yeah. Any U.S. eligible athlete placing the top 3 at the prior year's world champion. So,
yeah.
So she's
okay.
there.
So she had a couple, she was in a
yeah.
couple different ways.
She made it a couple so. Times. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So, what do you guys think? I think it's a good list overall.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay.
Ellie Anderson is the kind of the one we always forget about, right?
It, absolutely.
Because she's been racing in Europe
yeah.
so much,
yeah.
And we kind of forget about her over there. So, I'm fine with seeing her on that list too. So,
and she ticked all the boxes, right? They followed
yeah.
their rules, and
yep.
so the nice thing about this one is you don't or shouldn't complain about. Well, it's, you know, somehow based on some discretion, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
I
think the only one, for the most part. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Now let's get to the real controversy.
Only in that, I think when you have the riders who are in the 40s, we could have had a situation. Yeah, you're absolutely right, David. It just basically went down the line, and there's nobody who bunny hopped over anybody else, which I think we've seen in the past. So that's
right.
So you're right. Yeah, it's clear cut. There's really no argument that can be made for one rider of the other, because it's science and statistics and numbers.
Math. It's maths. All right, Bill, take us through.
Yeah.
Now the controversy will begin.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So here we go.
Tell us about the men.
So we had the argument against USA Cycling about not sending a full complement of U23 racers. And if you take the counter argument that, again, I think all three of us agree with, that, you know, maybe there should be more of a emphasis on developing riders over treating these sometimes 17, 18 year old women as seasoned professionals and putting strict requirements on them, that we should have sent an entire field. If we take that out of it, USA Cycling followed their eligibility requirements and picked a team on that.
Mm-hmm.
They've done the same thing for the men. And I think that this is where they get, this is not a defense of them, I'm saying, but they gain a little bit of cover because they stuck to their rules. And much like the U23 women, they did not fill the entire elite men's field. So we have 7 possible spots for elite men. We have the 6 that every nation is given, plus Curtis White is the continental champion, the Pan Am champ. So he's out of the equation. He's already in. After that, the team is Kerry Werner, Stephen Hyde, Anthony Clark, and Cody Kaiser. Now, they could have filled the whole team under the eligibility requirements. Toby Nortonblad and Jamie Driscoll both qualified under their requirements. Both are injured, so they are not racing. Jack Kisebirth also qualified, declined the invitation.
Right.
So that means that everybody who was within their top 75 for the men, and that is a huge point of contention, which I kind of agree with, that we look at the top 50 for the women and we bring it down to the top 75 for the men. I'm not really sure what the rationale is for that, but regardless, there isn't anybody else who is in that top 75. You'd have to look at Justin Lundin, who is 81st. Bruner's going, he's U23. Drew Dillman, who did not send, who did not apply, was at 88th, and, you know, down from there.
Right. So everybody that was eligible and wanted to go and wasn't injured is on that list.
And the thing that, and the other part of it is, you would have to find somebody on that list who fell out of that top 75 who could make an argument that they were medal capable. So, for instance, if we had Jeremy Powers at his peak and he got injured, missed half the season, but, you know, looked like somebody 6-7 years ago, I'm sorry, Jeremy, I may be pushing that too far back, who could have gotten on a world podium, then you say, okay, he's medal capable, we're bumping him up. And that's okay under their eligibility requirements. Nobody on that list, I think, meets that requirement. So there you have it. So not sending a full complement of elite men riders. So I think it's an interesting decision. I think that in the end, could the eligibility requirements be tweaked, especially for the younger riders? Sure. Did they follow the rules that they set forth? I think they did.
Yeah, and I think, like you kind of covered, Bill, I think it's two different situations when you're talking about juniors and U23s and when you're talking about the elite. Right. When you get to that point, you say these are the requirements. You should not be using the elite race as training, right? As a development, I guess is what I'm trying to say, right?
Right.
I mean, it's almost by definition, this is not about, you know, what you may be able to do in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a I like that decision more in the elite than I do in the U23 or juniors, and I think it's fine. I think the five they've chosen are fine. So,
I think an argument in the past could have been made as well, and I know that this is what other nations talk about. I know this is like what Steph Wyman says, is that world championships is not where you develop. It's not where you go to get experience. You should be doing that at other races. Easier to say when you're based in Europe.
Right.
The problem with that as an argument for USA Cycling is that there is no program to do that. This is for these riders, in that we no longer, and hopefully it's going to change, and that's what we're, you know, we're putting a lot of responsibility and hopes and dreams on Jesse Anthony's shoulders to create this, but this is what we're looking to get back to, in that we have a contingent of U.S. riders who go over and are able to experience these bigger races, so that this isn't their first experience racing in Europe, that they are able to go, that we are able to send a whole contingent of U23s and juniors to World Cups. And that's really where we should be. And that's where we need, that's the place that I think we need to get to.
Yeah, I think this is a, you know, in a way, this is a really bold statement by USA Cycling, all right? I think if you come out like this, and you're going to say this, we're not filling the spots unless you meet the requirement, then you are forcing your hand to get some type of development program going then, right? You have got to get that done. If you're willing to come out of the gate like this and start, you know, with we're going to be strict on these rules, but we don't have any kind of development plan over in Europe right now, you're really forcing your hand, because people are going to be looking for that then. And you've already, if you've made this first step, well, we're only going to select five elite men because that's the way, you know, we're going to do it. You're forcing your hand to develop something over there then, I think. So I think if they're going to be this strict on this, I think riders and fans and stuff are going to be looking hard at USAC and like, okay, what do you got coming up in Europe then to develop people to meet these goals if you're going to be this strict with the goals?
Or, yes? I agree with you, and that should probably be the answer. The other thing, and I know that the world does indeed revolve around cyclocross, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But maybe they say it's just not that big a deal. It's just cyclocross. And this and this isn't something that we're particularly good at, and we accept that. And hey,
if that's the case, then pick seven guys on the team. Don't be such, you know.
And they're already paying their, you know, other than the automatic selections, they're already paying their own way.
Right. So if that's the case, that would be my argument, David, is if that's the case, it's not that big a deal, then pick seven people.
But we do have things.
Agree with you. I do agree with you. And let's come back to the fact that the world does indeed revolve around cyclocross. So
we do
just
have
throwing
things
it out there. As a,
you know, we do have, like, Tim Johnson on the foundation side has started the Mud Fund. So there is There is stuff in the works to get more money back into cyclocross. We'll see if it actually happens. I think it's more, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I mean, it's the kind of thing we've been debating for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say, if you want the controversy, as far as, you know, because let's not hide behind it. Part of what I think got everybody up in arms is that this decision had originally with the U23 decision, and not even originally, still can be perceived as being sexist, in that it was only the women who were getting a smaller bite of the pie, and that's still the case, and I am not going to argue against that as far as the U23 men versus the U23 women go. Is that mitigated by the I'm gonna get so in trouble for this, but by them taking less men? Possibly. That's not the
fewer
argument
men.
I'm
fewer
making
men.
But that is what's happening here. I think that we still need to take a global look at how we decide these things and see if it is, if we are treating the same level of scrutiny to the men that we are to the women. Now, I say that because if we look at our friends in Belgium, They still, yes. And we talk about them wanting to develop, and it'll be interesting to see how this went down. And we talk about that they're concerned about their women not doing as well. They are sending a complete men's junior field, a complete men's U23 field. We already talked about how they may, if Tone Arts is able to beat Wout Van Aert at the next at Hoegerheide, that they will be able to send 8 men. They are only sending 4 women elite. They're sending Sané Kant, Lo Sells, Ellen Van Looy, Laura Verdonschot, and they are only sending 3 U23 women, Excel Bellaert, Jinza Peters, and Martha Truen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have total 7 women from Belgium competing. So I think that we have work to do in the U.S. Thank goodness we're not where Belgium is.
I agree. I agree. Definitely agree with that. So, all right. Well, anything else? Any other thoughts or anything like that? Do we want to wrap this thing up?
I'm amazed that we were able to do all of that, and we're at an hour 10.
We're at an hour. We're not at a 2-hour show.
Well, people don't all have right. as many bugs to clean this time of year, so you know.
That's right. That's right. Mr. David Palin.
Yes, sir.
If people want to get in touch with you on social media, what's the best way to do it?
Hey, try at Mr. David Palin.
On Instagram and Twitters?
On the Twits and the Instagrams. Yes, sir.
Nice. And Bill?
Yeah, at CX.
You got a list, I know.
I know. Well, it's at CX Arizona on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to get in touch with the show, please send us an email at feedback@cxhairs.com. I would love for everybody to check out I was going to go for YouTube. So please go to youtube.com/cxhairs. I'm going to be at Worlds. Hope to be putting up a lot of content from Worlds. So that'll be rolling out. Also working on Ruts and Guts for the women. I still hadn't posted that, so I'm going to get to that. That was a really fun race, so that should be up in the next couple of days. And then if you haven't been to cxhairs.com in a while, please go and check it out. We got I have a lot of guest writers on there. We're really trying to expand the people who are contributing to the site, trying to get more commentary and opinion up there, sort of generate some discussion. And I think it's gone really well, just like what we talked about with Amanda doing this this selection article. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's the kind of stuff that not necessarily going to give you every result for every race, but kind of give you sort of other topics to sort of chew on and start some discussion around the sport. So check out cxhairs.com as well. Also check out wideanglepodium.com and yes. Listen to all of the awesome shows that we have going on over there.
What's wideanglepodium.com?
I'm going to let Scott tell you.
Wideanglepodium.com. That's the Wide Angle Podium Network. Get over there. Listen to some great content by us on Bike Shop CX and Crosshairs Radio, TDDTIE. There's these other show. What's that? What's that other?
The Gravelot.
Slow Ride.
Gravelot.
Oh, damn. Yes. I think I'm talking about the Gravelot. You know that?
Yeah. The Gravelot is the other big show on the network.
The whippersnappers, the up and comers.
Yeah. Yep. And then we all have to carry that show, The Slow Ride. So, yeah. You know.
We do what we can.
Yeah, you know, we still want them there. So that's good. So get over to wideanglepodium.com. Become a member. Think about becoming a member. We always really appreciate it. And if you want to get in touch with me, Scott Diedenbach, you can do it at BikeShopCX on Twitter or Instagram and send your tech questions to our BikeShopCX show, BikeShopShow@gmail.com.
BikeShopShow@gmail.com.
There you go. All right, you guys. We're gonna do this again next week after the.
Yeah, we got to get our
World's
pick in. Oh, we got one more World Cup, and then I think we should also plan to do. We're gonna have our little meeting, our little production meeting right here on the air. Let's do Hoegerheide, and then also plan on all of our World's picks.
Yeah,
all in one show.
All in one.
Wow,
show.
Wow, that is an extravaganza right
because
there.
I will be on a plane after that.
There you go. All right, guys. I can't wait. So we'll see you then.
Sounds great.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.